This week, our focus is on right concentration. So just as a quick recap, the Noble Eightfold Path, there are a lot of numbers here, describe the eight things that you and I and all beings can do to attain liberation from suffering. The Noble Eightfold Path comes under the heading of the Four Noble Truths, again, numbers, and I'll explain what this means. When the Buddha attained enlightenment, according to the lore, more than 2,500 years ago, the very first teachings he gave, the pith instructions, the specific things he saw at the moment of enlightenment are the following four things. First, noble truth, life is suffering. Which sounds horrible, I know. And as I said previously, it doesn't mean life sucks, although sometimes it does. Rather, it means it's mysterious. Everything changes. We don't actually know what things mean. There is nothing permanent. Hey, now what? Everything is in continual flux, and there's actually nothing to hold on to. And that's the first noble truth. And I invite you to not take my word for that or anything. Don't take the Buddha's word. That was his own instruction. You must investigate this yourself, because that's actually where the spiritual path begins, with your intelligence and your investigation. So if you find that the first noble truth is not true, carry on. You do not have to think about it ever again. But the important thing is to investigate. Everything changes. Life is suffering, or unsatisfying, maybe is a better word. Second noble truth is called the cause of suffering. What makes that suffering is pretending it's not true. In other words, grasping creates suffering is the second noble truth. So acting as if what's true is not true is always going to cause suffering. And in this case, it's a profound invitation to look really closely at what is true about how life unfolds and who you are, and to be very honest, and to not front. Fronting causes suffering is another way of saying the second noble truth. The third noble truth is called the cessation of suffering. Now that you know the cause, which is grasping, you know the cure, which is stop grasping. So of course, it's not that easy, because everything in our world tells us, go out and get this, try to avoid that. And you know what? Go out and get that, and definitely try to avoid this, and I'm right with you. But if we think that what we will gain and what we can stave off will prevent the suffering of being human, that's where we will make the mistake. It's fine to go after what you want. It's fine to try to avoid the things you don't want, of course. Everybody's got to be very smart and very pragmatic and very skillful. It's the conclusion that we draw about what those things will mean if we are able to have them or hold them off that requires the deeper investigation. Don't take my word for this. I'll just say that again. So stop grasping. See clearly. Easier said than done. How do you do that? Fourth noble truth describes the eightfold path. So the fourth noble truth is the path to stop grasping, to stop suffering, to then become liberated from mishugas, perhaps is one word. Why would you want that? Well, of course, it's better to not suffer, but it's when we are deeply rooted in non-suffering that we can be of actual benefit to our fellow humans. So it's good for you. It would be good for me, but really it's good for us when one of us stops suffering. So the Noble Eightfold Path are the eight things you can do to stop grasping, to stop suffering. The first, just very, very briefly, I promise, right view. See clearly, we already talked about that. Right intention springs from right view. These two, first two, comprise the category of wisdom right view and right intention, those are actual wisdom beyond knowing, beyond perceiving even. And the right intention, as mentioned, naturally arises when we see things clearly. Why? Because you're awesome and you're wired to be awesome. You're completely whole. You're totally worthy. You're completely good right now. There's nothing broken. And when we see clearly, that's one of the things we see. So then our intentions come from someplace very wholesome and healthy. Third, right speech. These next four, comprise the category of ethical behavior. Right speech, making sure that whatever comes out of your pie hole is well-intentioned and rooted in the right view, and increases compassion and connection, which could mean anything. Right speech could be sweet and soft. It could be silence. It could be something harsh and provocative. You won't know unless you have the right intention and the right view. Right livelihood, how you spend your time earning your keep and taking care of your world, it could also be in alignment with these noble truths. Right action, the things you do, the way you arrange your home even, the way you treat others, the way you show up is fifth. Sixth is right effort. Did I skip one? No. Which means diligence. You don't give up. You don't give up on yourself. That's number one. You don't give up on this world, no matter how crazy it is, and it's pretty crazy. We don't give up. That's a big one. Now we come to the, how do you hold your mind so that this all remains in focus? Because it's easier to keep it in focus when somebody, myself in this case, is going blah, blah, blah. You go, oh, maybe. But then you go and someone cuts you off in traffic, or your neighbor's dog poops in the on your yard, or in your yard, or you fall madly in love, or your heart is broken. Then what happens to this view? That's where we want to really make sure we remain connected to it. So right concentration is key. And concentration doesn't just mean really focusing, although, of course, the ability to focus and be one-pointed is vital. So yesterday, interestingly to myself, I was in a conversation on this new social media app called Clubhouse. Perhaps you're on it. If you are, find me, friend me, I'll friend you back. I'm loving myself some Clubhouse, I got to say. It's an audio-only format where people gather together to have a discussion, and people can listen or join in that discussion. And last night, I was invited to be a presenter with five other people on the topic of flow states. And I was very excited. And I was also very honored because the other speakers were killer. Two of them were really high-level performance coaches. And two of them were deeply engaged in research on what it means to attain a flow state and how you can do it. And I am not a high-performance coach, and I'm not deeply engaged in research, so I hope what I said was useful. But the Buddhist view has a lot to say on flow states, perhaps from a different perspective. Because this view of flow is not about high performance, although it certainly could result in high performance. So it's interesting, as I was listening to them and trying to offer something useful, right concentration really came to mind as an equivalent of flow state. So right concentration, as I was saying, doesn't just mean I'm going to really, you know, tether myself to this object of attention, whether it's my breath in meditation, very handy, or the conversation that I'm having, or the work issue that I'm trying to address. It's not just gritting your teeth and imprisoning your mind in attachment to that object. Flow obviously has more of a quality of it's alive, it's responsive, it's improvisational was the word that kept coming to my mind. And right concentration, too, could be described as improvisational in the sense that in improvisation, as I imagine it, you're attending to what's there. Say you're a musician. You have to listen to others. You have to know where your instrument is. You have to feel where it's going, and where it's going is not static. So your attention flows with the direction of, in our case of our example, a musical composition. And then, okay, that's great. That's part one of flow / concentration. Part two is something arises within you that seems to fit, but you don't know. But you try, and you see, oh, maybe. No, let me try again. It's constantly moving. So while right concentration can rouse this sense of fixedness, I want to offer you the idea that right concentration is actually the opposite of fixed. It is absolute flow, absolute movement, attending in some composite way to your own thoughts and your own feelings and your own sensations and the environment. There's this stirring of attention that mixes these things together. And then you notice, I spaced out, and then you come back. But there's this sense of going with what is. That's a very powerful notion. And as I was listening, especially to the high performance coaches who work mostly, it seems, with athletes, that was really apparent that that's what they were talking about. If you're a basketball player, I guess, sometimes sportscasters used to say things like, he's unconscious, or she's in the zone. And that word unconscious always struck me as really funny, because what they meant was the opposite. I'm not a sportscaster, so forgive me if I'm misinterpreting, but super conscious, absolutely aware, but not hung up on discursive thoughts, not hung up on the story of what you're aware of. That's the key, my friends. Not the story, the thing itself. What I feel, what I sense, what I notice, what I think, minus my interpretation of it, is consonant with what it means to flow. Something to think about. I'm personally really enjoying thinking about it, and I hope you will too. So in our meditation practice, which we're going to do shortly, you will notice, or you have noticed, that we absolutely experience what it means to be in a flow state. We touch in and we lose it, and we touch in and we lose it. That's perfect. The minute you try to stay in a flow state, you're out of a flow state. So that's one thing that makes it so tricky. There were all this conversation yesterday about how do you get in? Tricks and tips. And these are experts, so they had tricks and tips, and they're interesting. But my only trick and tip is stop trying and start being curious. And don't hold on. Easier said than done. So flow states, big fan. Techniques for getting into it, tricky. Just as is right concentration, because the minute you start concentrating on concentrating, you stepped out. So anyway, I won't belabor that point, but I think it's really interesting. So when we meditate, which we're going to do shortly, we're going to practice what I would say are the two components of flow state / right concentration. And the first is absolutely just full-on concentration. Focus, one-pointedness, precision, like purposeful precision of mind. In our case, we focus on the breath. In other meditations, you may focus on something else. That's fine. All meditation means, P.S., is placing your attention on an object other than your discursive thoughts. Your discursive thoughts being the sometimes quite profound, sometimes quite annoying, sometimes quite funny or icky flow of thoughts and judgments and critiques and commentary. That's all. That's still fine. Keep it going. no problem. You are not an enemy here. But instead of paying attention to that, I'm going to place my attention on something else. That is what meditation is. In our case, that something else is the breath. In other meditations, that something else is a sound, a mantra, or an image. Cool. So in meditation, as you know, or will know if this is your first time meditating, and if so, special welcome to you, we let attention rest on the breath. The instruction is not let attention bear hug the breath, or death grip the breath, or cling to the breath. It's just rest on the breath. It's happening anyway, so it's quite convenient. And when your attention strays, which it will, no big deal, go on, just come back. Boom. Strengthen the capacity to come back. You can really work at that. You can rouse the intention to do that. You can study how to do that. You can make every effort to do that. You can try harder to do that. All of that is good. And you will develop a greater capacity for focus, also called mindfulness. However, there's a second piece here in our little story that is absolutely fascinating. And it's bound to happen. It has already happened, I'm quite sure, in your practice, which is somehow from this one-pointedness, something else happens. Your awareness expands. You notice things you had not noticed before. You make connections that you had not made before. Your sense perceptions sharpen. You feel more deeply. You see more clearly. This, as mentioned, is called awareness. It is inseparable from focus. Why? I don't know. It just is. In my experience, and in also the experience of 2,500 years of meditators in the Buddhist tradition and other traditions too, I'm sure, awareness just arises. So I want to say that again. Awareness just arises. In other words, you can't work at it as you can work on focus. All you can do is allow it. Notice it, appreciate it, relax with it, and then it expands further. So these two pieces, focused and panoramic, one-pointed and spacious, are constantly happening. And I would say being with that combination and noticing which one you're leaning towards right now, but not ever stopping and saying, okay, I got to freeze here, because you could try, but you absolutely can't, I would say is one way of describing flow state or right concentration. Having this appreciation or awareness of awareness and one-pointedness and their interrelationship, and how to bring right concentration off the cushion is to continue holding your mind in a state of inseparable focus and spaciousness with what you think, what you feel, what you sense, and what you notice in the environment. So it's rather than being a stick straight, I'm not going to take my eyes off of this, or I'm not going to stop listening, I'm really paying attention. Rather than that, it's the, as mentioned earlier, it's like the opposite. It's relaxing so completely that what is has the space to make itself known. And then what is, of course, immediately disappears almost before it arises. So you stay in the flow. How do you do that? Well, if you have right view, right intention, practice right speech, right livelihood, right action, right effort, right concentration wants to love you and happens. So that's the foundation. And then, of course, in our meditation practice, which we're going to do now, that is exactly what we're practicing. So you already know how to do it. You totally know how to do it. So let's do it. Begin your practice, please, by just setting aside all those words Any thoughts or reactions you may have had, just poof, you can let them all go. And take your posture. The meditation posture is very specific, but it's also relaxed and dignified. So the legs can be crossed loosely in front of you if you're on the sitting on a cushion on the floor, or the equally spiritual chair. And if you sit in a chair, please sit with your feet flat on the floor. And in all cases, rouse a sense of earth right here. Even if you're on the 20th story of a high rise, you can still feel the earth below you, holding you. The hands rest on the legs, palms down. Sit up straight in a way that reminds you of your gracefulness. And genuineness and uniqueness. Let the belly soften a lot and let the shoulders relax. The mouth is closed. The lips and teeth can be slightly parted, helps the jaw to relax. And the chin is tucked a little bit. So the back of the neck is long. The breath is natural, in and out through the nose. No breathing technique. You know perfectly well how to breathe, so just keep doing that. The eyes are open. And the gaze is cast down to a spot in front, up to 4 to 6 feet or 2 or so meters. And rather than having a sense of searching or seeking through the eyes, let there be a sense of receiving through the eyes. Just allow what's in the visual field in. And we practice with the eyes open because we're practicing being awake. It's much easier to find the Noble Eightfold Path when we're awake. Let the brow relax. And let your attention rest on the breath. The breath actually can breathe you, as often sometimes it is described. The breath flows in and out, and you can just let it carry you. Your mind loves to rest on the breath. Nothing to think about or discover. Just to be carried. So let your attention flow in on the in-breath and dissolve out on the out-breath and really give yourself to the dissolve. The next in-breath just happens, and then there's another dissolve. Your mind continues to make thoughts, no problem. That's what it does, like your eyes see and your ears hear, and there's no off switch particularly, and nor does there need to be one. Just let that happen. It's no problem. Most of your thoughts will come and go without really distracting you. You don't have to do anything about them. Please, nothing. Only if you notice that you've become so distracted by a line of thought that you've lost track of your breath. Fabulous. Very good wakeful moment. Notice that. Label it thinking. Let go. Just let go. Doesn't matter what the content of the thought is, really doesn't, right now. Gently come back to your breath and take a fresh start with this inhale and this exhale. So we'll sit together in silence for a little while until you hear the bell. Thank you so much for your practice. It's important. Thank you for practicing with me. I definitely feel it. And thank you for practicing together in this amazing, one-of-a-kind Sangha, the Open Heart Project.